Hey y'all, it's time for Rolling Dice and Taking Names. In this episode, the guys review España 1936, Sand, Finding Atlantis, and Dabba Walla. Plus, a new taste buds with Mountain Dew Baja Laguna Lemonade. Listeners, do I sound more mature? Because now I am a grandma. Regardless of grandpa status, Marty will never be mature.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Rolling Dice and Taking Names. This is episode 321, entitled Moving Out. My name is Marty.
I'm Tony.
All right, let's go ahead and get this out of the way, because people are going to bring it up, so let's go ahead and say it now. As of this past weekend, I'm officially the father of somebody who had a child. There you go.
What up, Paul?
I'm officially the father of some other person who had a child. That we're just going to, that's how we're going to put it.
Okay, abuelo. All right, Lolo. What up, Gramps? What's up, Granddaddy?
I don't know what that means. I'm not old enough. I'm not familiar with those terms. They sound like somebody like an old person would use. So I'll just say, yeah. My son had a little healthy baby boy. So
he didn't have anything.
Congratulations to him.
Yeah, congrats to him for doing it and just standing there.
Well, no, actually, he was super, super good. I was very proud of him. The wife had a very hard time delivering, had to go through hours of labor hours of pushing, ended up having to have a C-section, and he was a rock for her the whole time. So I am very proud of how he handled it, and she was a trooper too. She had to go through a lot. So they leaned on each other and got through it, which was good.
Well, I'm glad that everybody is healthy, and we appreciate you not communicating with the game channel. The boy was radio silence, y'all. We were like, okay, did anything happen over the weekend? I mean, we were egging him on, and he's radio silence. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to be quiet about this and have fun with them. I know what you were doing on your side. You were doing it on purpose to egg us on.
I wasn't having fun with it, but I mean, you know, it's like, I don't need to get into this and be called Gramps and all this stuff. So,
yes, you don't need to, but you know, if the title fits,
that's fair. That's fair.
Okay.
I guess in theory it does. I guess that's something you might call a person who has a child that has their own child, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I guess that
would be the appropriate term. Yeah.
Now, but I bet Vanessa has just embraced this completely.
It was hard to pull her away from Jacksonville. She's like ready to go back. In fact, she's already got it worked out. She's going to be going down for a week and a couple weeks. Her family's there right now helping out for the next week and a half. And then she's going to come down for a little bit and help during her turn and stuff. So she is very anxious and excited to go back. So yeah, she is embracing this as she has since day one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I knowing Vanessa for as long as I have, I knew she would. But you know what's even better than this?
What's that?
You are going to get a new ornament on your tree with grandma and grandpa.
Probably so. I assume there is one of those. Vanessa works part-time at the Hallmark store, mainly for the purpose of getting early access to ornaments and getting good deals on them. Mm-hmm. And so more than likely, I guess there is one of those. I never looked, but I'm sure it's there. She's already bought them baby's first Christmas ornament.
Of course. I knew that was probably bought last year. During the clearance sales.
Oh, that's true. This probably was. Probably as soon as she found out, she got 2023's version of that. By the way, if you're into the Christmas ornaments, the wish book is out there now. And if you want to go put in a wish list for the store, they got some cool pop culture ones. This year, the video game console is the original Xbox.
Oh, I think I have one. No, I don't. I don't think I've got the 360. I don't have the original Xbox.
And there's some good Pokemon in there. There's a couple in there. That people may want to get if you're into that sort of thing. But anyway, yeah, there's some really neat ornaments this year. Okay.
Why didn't we do a podcast on ornaments?
It probably would have gotten a lot more attention.
It would have. It really would have.
Yeah.
And the opening, open videos. I'm going to have to go out there after we're done recording tonight and just do a YouTube search on Hallmark ornaments and see how many there are. I know they've got more followers on their YouTube channels, and we could do, you know, first opening. If not, I see an exit strategy. I see an off-ramp.
You know, that's probably true. If people do unboxing of board games, guaranteed there's an unboxing of a Christmas ornament channel.
Absolutely.
Somewhere. Yeah.
You know there's one. So, well, congrats to Adam, and I'm glad the family is all healthy and safe, and the baby come home. I mean, baby wasn't premature, all that. Everything was solid, right? Good.
So because of the C-section stuff, they had to stay a couple extra days. As of right now, they're supposed to be, as of this recording, they're supposed to be coming home today. We just haven't heard that they've done that yet.
Okay. And she'll enjoy getting pushed out in the little wheelchair and then loaded up in
the car.
They
don't do that anymore.
They don't. Mm-hmm. I thought it was hospital policy.
We saw the other day just parents walking out, put their kid in the car and drive away. Like, no supervision.
Oh, my gosh.
Things have changed a lot.
I mean, who is inspecting the car seat?
Unless they did it beforehand, nobody was out there inspecting the car seat before they put the newborn into the car seat. Now, again, maybe it was done beforehand. But the couple that I saw, a couple cars of people getting in, there was no fanfare or anything. It's just like, get in the car and go home.
Man, okay, that's wild. I would not have expected that. I mean, because I'm sure when Adam was loaded up and when Rebecca was loaded up, we had to go through the, do you know how to put in a car seat? They came out and checked mm-hmm. the car seat. Mm-hmm. They made sure mm-hmm. that everything was done. They were rolled out on their wheelchairs and everybody was done appropriately and was all nervous and all this stuff. And man, mm-hmm. okay, all right, yeah. Well. That's good. So, well, since you've gotten older.
Sure.
And I've just encountered something new in my life due to my getting older is, and people hear us talk a lot about our, you know, the health things. We talk about colonoscopies. Now, we have not done what Retinlink did recently, where they did the broloscopies, where they both went and had colonoscopies and were sort of out and talking to one another. Dude, you know, appreciate you, but you and I, we're not doing that.
No, there's, I don't see any value in that whatsoever.
No, they were just trying to push out the colonoscopies, but both you and I have had stress tests and I had my first one recently. And mm-hmm. let me just tell you, I don't want to do that again. Mm-hmm. That was because I mean, you know, they do, they stress you out. They make you do things on the, and they put you full. They walked in with the chemical, with the radio isotope in a little lead box. Mm-hmm. Let's just say this. If you ever have questions about how your heart health is, do not delay. Make sure you go see your doctor. That's very important. So just throwing that out there for people. Don't think it's just gas. You don't know.
When I did it, and this was back in my 30s, I haven't done one. It wasn't the radioisotope. So that mm-hmm. was, in fact, I've vaguely remember the procedure. So it was one of those things you get on the, they hook you up to everything and you get on the treadmill and you just start walking and then they increase mm-hmm. the speed.
Increase speed and the incline, all that fun stuff.
I can't remember. Is it a certain time you go or is it a certain target heart rate they got to get you to?
Time. It was time this time. They can do it chemically and they can do it through exercise. Exercise is the best. But the funniest thing was for 40 plus years, well, I forget when I started puberty. I don't know when. I have never, ever shaved my chest. I'm standing there, and she's got to hook up these electrodes, and all of a sudden I hear this. Zzz, vroom. I'm like, what the heck? And then I looked like a patched dog. You know, a dog that's gotten furred
off. At least it was shaved and not wax strips.
Ooh, that would have hurt. I could have walked away from that. What are you doing? But that's been bothering me for a week. And now we are TMIing our audience way too much.
We did some early stuff, did some late life stuff, some midlife stuff. So I got this in the show notes, just college exams, because to remind me of something. As I get older, I'm starting, you know, the college years, I try to keep them fresh in my mind, but I can't remember exactly everything. When it came college exam time, which is what's going on across the country right now, it's time for a college finals exam. Did you ever have any classes where, depending on how well you did during the semester, you could just drop and not even take a final?
I think I had like one or two if you had a certain, not that it ever applied to me, but mm-hmm. yeah, I think there were people, the people who would blow the curves out the window in exams were excused from taking the exams because they knew they would be in the upper 90s and the rest of us would have to repeat and they didn't want to see our silly faces again.
All right, so then I don't remember that at all. And it seems like now with my two youngest, they were like, oh, it's like exam week and like Brett came home today. And I was like, well, why are you home? Oh, yeah, I don't have to take any of my exams. I was like, how many did you not have to take? Four. What? So exams were supposed to be very stressful and everything like that. And come to find out, I talked to Travis. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, most of them are like, you know, exam could be the drop grade. So if you did well in your other stuff, you could drop your, not even take your final because that would just be your drop grade. Wait, drop grade? You had the option to drop a grade and it could have been the final exam. I just don't remember being that lenient. And I think colleges have gotten soft is where I'm getting to.
Is that where you're getting to? Because I do remember you would always statistically, they would normalize, do all that fun stuff with the grades to where we one may be dropped, but it was never an exam. It was always a homework or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Now that makes sense, dropping a homework grade or something. But I remember coming in where finals were 25% of your grade. Mm-hmm. Nobody was getting rid of that stuff.
No, they weren't getting rid of it. And also, you paid for that experience.
You should take the exam because I paid for it.
That's right. You paid for it. Therefore, they need to experience the stress and the pain and the suffering that goes with the exams. Don't pass up on opportunity. You only get to do this maybe four times or eight times, but it's only once unless you repeat the class. There you go. You need to experience it for that class. Oh, the dread. I remember having to run out. One time I got so torqued up, I had to leave during an exam, let's just say, and relieve myself because I had torqued my insides up, because that was probably the only time that I ever had stress is during certain exams, you know?
Oh, every time. I still have nightmares over that stuff. And y'all, in engineering, exams would be like 3 hours long, 3 hour mm-hmm. blocks, and there might be four questions.
Right.
And it would take all 3 hours for four questions. It was insane.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the Rodney Dangerfield movie where he goes back to college and it's, back to school. I have only one question for you with 26 parts.
That's right. Do you remember the movie with Val Kilmer, Real Genius?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the exam scene where they're prepping for the exam and they're sitting in the library and the guy just starts freaking out and screaming and runs out of the library and somebody just comes and takes his place at the table? It's like, yeah, that's what happens.
Oh, man. I need to go back and watch that one. The only thing I remember from that, from Real Genius, was the popcorn and the nitrous oxide frozen coins that they would put in the vending machine.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, oh man, that's pretty much, I always forget that was Val Kilmer, but yeah, man. Oh, but you know, one of the things you needed for those exams when you and I were in school were pencils.
Number two pencil, baby. But usually I use the mechanical. So did you like the mechanical that had the click on the top or the one on the side down towards where the lead came out?
I think I was on the top is the only mm-hmm. one I ever had, but I'd break the lead, so I actually prefer the big old yellow number twos.
Oh, okay. I was gonna ask what size lead do you prefer? Was it the 0.7 and the 0.5? I was definitely the larger lead.
So I was 0.5. But you're left-handed, so you need all the help you can get.
Well, that's true. But I would always just break the lead on the small stuff.
Yeah. Do you know how hard it is to find, or at least mechanical pencils? Like I'd go to the supply thing here at work and you just cannot find pencils.
Nobody uses pencils anymore. No, nobody writes anymore.
Mm-mm, they don't. Matter of fact, they were talking about work orders today in one of the meetings and the guy was sitting there going, we don't even have printers anymore. Everything is digital. You know, they don't even send out work orders. Everything, they get them on their iPads and they sign off on that, digitally sign it and send them back in. I'm like, man, they've missed out. But more importantly, this is going to be a terrible segue.
Okay.
I thought.
We'll go with it.
I know. I thought that Rolling Rights were out. I really did. I thought, have they not really done enough of them? It's like nature themes.
Yeah, except there's a huge Kickstarter coming out right now from North Star Games called Nature.
Mm-hmm. And from Inside Up, Earth had a gangbuster on its abundance on its expansion that you and I got to play a prototype of.
Yep.
And you know, so if you like it, be sure to get out there. Shoot, it may have ended by the time this episode drops, but still, I mean, congrats to Connor and being able to pull that off. And you got all those special accessories to make your trees prettier and things like that. So if Earth is one of your go-to games in the evening, definitely go check out that Kickstarter for him. When we first started this a long time ago, I signed up for a group called the Envoy Heralds.
And first, started what?
This show.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's been that long. All right. Yeah, Envoys. Yeah.
It has been that long.
Trust me, y'all. This is getting back to a roll and write thing somewhere. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's not. It'll never get there. I'll get squirreled on something else. But so Envoy goes and they help cons and things like that with demos, things like that. You can go out and request Envoy to provide support. Also, some of the game manufacturers will go to Envoy and say, hey, we've got a game coming out and we really would like for it to be shown at stores to drive interest. And so Envoy Heralds can go out and say, hey, yeah, I would like to demo it during this week. So one of the things that I've done with having this show is that you and I will sometimes get some of these games so that we can talk about them on the show, so we can reach a larger audience than me sitting in a game store and seeing maybe four people for a 5 to 6 hour stint.
That might be a larger audience.
It might be. So Reiner Knizia has a new series of Roll and Writes coming out, and they're called, one of them is called Pick a Pen Gardens, Pick a Pen Reefs, Pick a Pen Crypts. And we're supposed to highlight gardens. Well, my test audience were you and Bert.
Yep.
So Pick a Pen Gardens is very much like Knock Mall in how you play it. So anybody who's ever played Knock Mall, they know how that works. But the unique aspect, which is what I think set Marty off the ledge when I introduced it, was you're not rolling a die. You're not spinning anything. All the pencils that you're using, five colors, you roll the pencils and they have numbers on them. And that tells you when you pick that pencil up, that is the color you're using and how many spaces you have to mark on your sheet.
How many sides is on a pencil? Six or eight?
Six. No. You know, if I had a real pencil, I could tell you this.
Well, you got the game right there, don't you?
Yeah, but it's still in the box. So I'll reach over there and get it. Hold on. Give me a second.
Yeah. So again, the idea is at the end of these pencils, there is a sticker that's wrapped around the pencil where each flat side of the pencil has a number associated with it. So you pick up all the pencils. And for some reason, Tony was shaking it like dice, which made no sense because they're not moving in his hand enough to be able to be randomized or anything.
And then it felt better.
Then you just kind of roll them across the table. And like you said, there's different colors. And when it's your turn, you pick a color. And then whatever's number is showing on that pencil is the number of spaces you got to fill in on the card. But like you said, Tony, the game itself with the roll and writes, pretty generic, or there's nothing really unique about it. You're trying to fill in as many spaces as you can. You get awards if you have the biggest colored in space. You're trying to maybe be the first person to fill out the whole outside perimeter of the block, or maybe fill in every space. You get points for doing that. Yeah, you get points for the, you know, if I do two spots of every color, I unlock a bonus. If I do three spots of every color, I unlock a bonus, et cetera. So it's kind of generic in how that works, which is good because if you never played a roll and write or want to teach a roll and write, this is a good way to do it. But like you said, the gimmick with all these is the pencils.
Six-sided
pencils.
Six-sided pencils, yes. And for gardens, it was if you fill in a garden all of one color, you get to mark one of the spots, keeping in mind that the spots on the bottom are not the size of gardens. So I appreciate the different themes that he's got going here, and it is very much structured like Knock Mall. It really is for this game.
In Knock Mall, could you modify the number?
No, you could not.
Okay, you can't. So you can't do that in it either. So if you happen to be stuck with or have to draft a pencil that you can't use because you don't have the spaces to fill out or whatever, then you'll take negative points. There's a spot at the bottom of the page you mark, I just can't use the pencil this turn, and you get more negative points each time that you can't use a pen, which is actually one that triggers to the end of the game. If somebody fills out that whole row, that's also going to trigger the end of the game.
Which is just like So Clever or Quicks or any of the rolling rights that are out there. So it's the same concept. The unique thing is the pencils being rolled, and yes, I shook the pencils like an idiot. I'll admit that. I don't know why.
You weren't an idiot. I just thought we just thought it was funny. Here's the thing about it. Some of the pencils, the stickers weren't exactly aligned correctly to where the numbers were on the flat side of the pencil. Some of the numbers actually crossed over a corner. And so then we were looking, it's like, wait a minute, is that a two or a three? You know, which side is it? And instead of a die, you just go, you know exactly what it is. The whole gimmick of these things actually rolling pencils, I would have just preferred just to have, how was it, five different colored pencils and then five colored dice matching those colors and just play that way. And just picked up the pencil that's of the die that you drafted.
Right. And so that's kind of similar to what, when you roll it in Nachmal, you're going to get a value and a color, and then you're coloring the boxes. But how, that's how they had to differentiate. Instead of the boxes having color, it's the pencils that have color.
Right, right. So again, I appreciate the idea behind it. It's just in quality control. Some of those stickers didn't get on the pencils right, and the numbers overlapped a corner of the pencil, and you just couldn't tell. Sometimes, well, is it more on the two? Is it more on the three sort of deal?
Exactly. And as far as age goes, let's see if I can see these. The room's gotten kind of dark on me because the sun going down on, how's that Elton John song? Eight and over. It's easy. Shoot, 6 year olds can play this.
I mean, so it's got multiple themes, right? So you mentioned all those. They all do different things. We only played the one garden. So if you're looking for an easy roll and write, this is a good way to go. Just think the execution or the quality control on the actual pencils themselves could have been a little bit better.
Not, and I followed up on that, and there were some people that even their pencils were a little bit worse. So hopefully they'll get that corrected and you can get some new stuff. If you buy it and it's all messed up, just, hey, get some new parts to this game.
While you were going to Spain, I thought, well, fine, since I can't be in Spain, I'm going to play a game based on something that took place in Spain. This is a reprint from Devere Games of a game that came out in 2007 called España 1936. Now, you watched Oppenheimer, right?
Yes, I did.
So you remember the whole kerfuffle thing about accusing him of being a communist because he said he sent money to revolutionaries in Spain?
Yes.
That's exactly what this was about.
Oh, okay.
So
This was about Oppenheimer sending money to revolutionaries in Spain?
This is about the revolutionaries that money was being sent to from Oppenheimer. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was supporting the communist side of the revolution and was basically split into two groups. You had one side, the nationalist side, that was backed by the fascist. And then you had another side that was consisted of some moderates and communists. And they were basically nationalists trying to keep control, the revolutionaries, communists trying to take over. So this whole conflict that took place in the late 30s. And I just had to tie it into Oppenheimer because it's like, oh, okay, so this whole time where they're talking about supporting the Spaniards, the revolutionaries in Spain, this was exactly it. So this is a two-player game that you're playing out that conflict. One plays as one side, one plays as another. Now, one thing I appreciate this is because it's an older game coming from 2007, it's very basic in what you're trying to do. The whole goal of the game is kind of like area control. You've got different cities in Spain. You're trying to take control of them by moving units around the board. So you have these little tokens that represent units. When you go into a city, a fight may occur. And if you win, you knock out the other units' fights and you could take over an area. The goal is to claim so many areas of the game, etc. How the game works is very basic, but I wanted to explain some maybe some unique things about it. I love games that are played over phases, and that's how this one is done. So the very first thing you're going to do, you're going to draw cards. This is a card-driven game, which we typically love. The cards have multiple uses. The cards can be used for the event text, or they can be used during combat for the purpose of supporting your attack, or when you're defending, helping you out when you defend. So a lot of the decisions around the game is, how do I use this card? When do I use it? This has a really cool event, but should I save it for a combat that might be coming up? So you're going to draw cards. You're going to have movement. You've got units on the board that you can move to spaces. As soon as you move to a spot, there's somebody's there. A conflict could occur. This is kind of interesting, too. You have a certain number of generals that you can put out onto the board. The generals indicate where a fight is going to happen. So you may go into a city, and that city could be in conflict, but if neither you assign a general there, a fight's not going to occur.
Ooh.
So I like this part too, because it's like, okay, there's a little bit of bluffing. I'm moving in here, but I really don't want to fight there. And as long as your opponent doesn't place a general there, then a fight's not even going to occur. So I like this part of the game where it's like deciding, where do I want a conflict to happen? What area do I want to tried to gain a foothold in, and then you're actually going to fight the battles. I think the battles are really straightforward too. They actually give you a board where you remove all the pieces from the city and you put them on the board. You have your units that indicate the number of dice that you're going to roll, but you also have support units. There's tanks and planes. Now, during the movement phase, you have tanks on the board that you can move around, but you also have airplanes that you have that you can just assign anywhere you want. What's cool is each of those support tokens do different things. For example, if you have a tank there supporting, it increases the value of one of your dice by the value that's on the tank. So if it's +2, you get to add +2 to a die. Why do you want to do that? Because fives and sixes are hits. You're looking for fives and sixes. If you have airplanes there, they can provide additional die for you, which is nice. So they provide additional die. Tanks provide modifiers to the dice, as well do the generals. But the way the combat works is the very first thing you do, if two airplanes are in the same spot, they actually fight each other. So you have a dogfight where one could get eliminated. Mm-hmm. And if you eliminate one of the support planes, hey, that's better for you because you ain't got to deal with them. But once you get down to fighting, when you attack with the unit, you can only do it one time. But the defender can defend multiple times. So as the attacker, if I put out four units, I'm only going to get four attacks. But if they got three really big guys, they could defend with them three different times and come out unscathed.
Gotcha.
So the battles move very quick, and it's during the battles when you could play cards. The cards can either add dice to your roll, or the cards could add values to your die, or as defending, it could actually subtract value from the attacker's die, etc. So the combat's very fluid. Once you move beyond that, you kind of reset and go again, and you play over a number of rounds. So very straightforward, but as with most of these games, all of the strategy is in how you move your units, how do you play your cards, and using tactics of when you want to attack with those units. Okay. All that sounds great, and we Bert and I had a good time playing it. The issue is, did you see the time of play in this game? According to BGG, the time of play on this game is 180 minutes.
Woo!
So if you divide by 60, that's 3 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
That 3 hours is not kidding. It is a three-hour game.
Wow.
And so we spent a lot of time at Qdoba playing España 1936, and we enjoyed our time, but the problem is this is the only mode of play you have. Oh. I wish they would include an invariant in the game to where you only play half the number of rounds and cut it to 90.
Gotcha.
I think a 90-minute game with this would be amazing because you get to do a lot. Even if you preset the board, even if they say, okay, the war's halfway over, preset the board like this and just pick up where you kind of left off and finish the game from there. I wish there was a shorter way to play the game. So that's what's going to hinder me from getting it to the table that often is a three-hour game. But it is a very basic and clever card playing game. I just wish there was some way I could play it faster.
I got you. Well, I hate I miss that because it does sound like a blast. See, I always play the good stuff while I'm gone.
And see, I hadn't intended on playing with you, know, for us to sit down and find time to play. But again, it just worked out that our other friend Mark couldn't be there that night. You were gone. I said, look, I've got this two-player game. You just want to try it out? And we went, sure. And again, we had fun doing it. But at 3 hours, we were both like, this, I wish we could get this in under 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking through the rules. Is there a variant or something? And it doesn't seem that there is.
Okay. Well, dang it. Well, maybe you and I can get there. If they all disappear on us and it's just you and I can go get this played.
Yeah, for sure. Now, they do have different scenarios where you can set up the units differently and stuff. There's a whole advanced rules because this includes the expansion from the original game, Armada. So you can have naval battles that come in to play too that we didn't even use yet.
Planes and trains and automobiles.
So yeah, even though it's a historical themed game, the gameplay is really clever in being a really cool two-player area control game.
Okay.
With quick to resolve combat. And that's what I'm all about. Is it quick to resolve combat? And if dice are involved, how can I modify my rolls? And they give you plenty of ways to handle that to reduce the amount of luck in the game.
Good.
I had this in the link.
Yes, I read it.
I just thought this was so funny. So sometimes the comments on BGG rankings are absolutely hilarious, especially on games that hadn't even come out. And you know this, there's almost a board game meme around BGG and the stats where people hate a game without ever playing it, give it ones. People then just say, oh no, I'm sure the game is going to be great, and give it tens. And basically everybody's trying to cancel out each other. So there is a game that's on Kickstarter right now called Rebirth by Rhino Canizia. I know nothing about it, but somebody just pointed out these comments to me, and I just thought this was the funniest thing ever. So I'm just going to read a handful of comments that are all tied to each other on a certain topic. So one person says, again, this is on the BGG page for this game. This is the BGG ratings for a game that's not out yet. Rating this a 10 to offset some random's dude rating of 1. I checked this guy out. They're trying to generate hate to decrease sales. I guess this is normal, but it's not a realistic rating of the actual game. Later, somebody says, I'm rating it a 10 to offset the 1 that was supposed to offset the 10 that was supposed to offset the 1 that was supposed to offset the 10. Somebody says, well, I checked out that guy too. Rating it a 10 to offset the 1 that was supposed to offset the 10 that was supposed to offset the 1 that was supposed to offset the 10 that was supposed to offset the 1. Later on, rating this a 1 to offset the publisher's rating of a 10. I checked this guy out. They're just trying to generate hype to increase the sales. Check the guy out who checked the 10 out, who checked the 1 out, giving it a rock solid 5 so it stays in the middle to new information are shared, like overall design, gameplay, and story. I checked out the guy giving it a 5, ended up confused and found nothing, rated it a 6 by accident. Rating this a 5 to offset some other's dude rating a 5. Have no idea about the game, no. I was reading it because I was dying. Rating this a 10 because October's my favorite month. Rating this a 1 because Kenichi is number 1. Rating this a 10 because 4 plus 5 equals 10. I don't know. Oh my gosh. So you see why BGG ratings mean absolutely nothing?
Oh, yeah. And they're never going to tell you how that works at BGG, which is fine. I mean, I strictly use BGG now just for, you know, like the rules and getting quick links to videos.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I mean, I do look at them when I go say, okay, what was a very popular game at this point? I will go take a look at it and like, you know, how did it stack up? What do certain people think? And you can weed this stuff out. It's like anything. It's kind of like you saying to me, well, what about Metacritic? You know, what about IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and popcorn and all this other stuff? So, you know what you like, people. If it speaks to you, go look at it.
So after that reading and laughing and everything, I'm pretty thirsty. We got a new Mountain Dew drink to try, don't we?
Yes, we do. We got, well, it's the Baja season, and they're hitting everything with Baja. So, yeah, let's get that. Let's give that a taste.
Taste buds. Two incredible stuff. Taste buds. Two incredible stuff. Taste buds. They're just a bunch of.
Right, so what do we got here?
So what we have is one of the Mountain Dew new flavors. It is called Baja Laguna Lemonade. So found this. It's not the zero. So this is going to be one case and done.
Uh-huh.
And I like lemonade. And if I can take a quick look here and open up the window so I have a little light so I can read it. Oh, look at that. What flavors are there? Oh, mango. Mango and lemonade. I love me some mango. I like some lemonade. Right. So you ready to taste these?
Let's crack it open. I smell the mango.
You know what it smells like? Because I've been drinking a little bit of this because they recently had 2 liters on sale for $1. I haven't seen that since pre-pandemic days. It smells like Code Red to me.
No, I don't get the Code Red.
You don't? Okay.
No, I get more of a tropical type flavor.
Okay, tropical. Yeah, maybe Baja Tropical. Like a fruit punch.
Sure. Okay. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's taste it.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But there is definitely the lemonade in there.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
got that tart.
I am a big fan of lemonade. I wish this was zero sugar.
I don't know if they're doing that anymore. Donna drank her last Spark Zero. We can't find them anymore, so that's done. So mm-hmm. they're all these, and you shared out. Well, somebody shared with us the Voodoo's already being advertised.
Yeah, yeah. They've showed the can that'll come out later this year. But no, this is actually pretty good. And actually, I got another one. So, you know, I got an orange can or something that I got to bring to you that we'll try next episode.
Okay.
But it's also a Baja flavor.
Okay. Very good. Then I'm looking for, I love orange. Because which restaurant has that orange slushy thing right now going on?
Oh, Wendy's has the orange sickle frosty.
Oh, orange sickles.
You like orange? You like push-ups?
I love push-ups. I love the cream, the white and orange.
Creamsicles.
Creamsicles. Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah. You need to go try Wendy's Frosty. Yeah, you'll like it.
It's got a tart to it, which is, you know, from the lemonade. So the lemonade definitely is overshadowing the mango for me, but I don't mind that.
It's pretty really good.
It's good. Yeah, okay. If it comes out in zero, it'll go into the rotation, but if it's never going to see zero, it will not. Mm-mm.
Same here. All right, let me go let the wives try it. Recently, Miniature Market has started having back room deals. These are deals that run from Tuesday to Friday every single week. Guess what? I've got some information on some upcoming deals, so listen closely. From May 7th until May 10th, they're having a backroom deal that features a lot of Games Workshop stuff. We're talking Warhammer Underworlds boxes and miniatures, Warcry boxes, paint, 40K models, Age of Sigmar models, and many more. It's over 100 items in all, and again, remember, it runs from May 7th to May 10th. Now, the following week, May 14th to May 17th, we have a whole variety of products coming up on sale. You know, I've been a big fan of the Aconite books, where there's going to be a lot of books from them on sale, including novels from Marvel, Legends of the Five Rings, plus there's going to be some Zombicide products. If you're into Wrath of Kings, some of the miniatures will be on there. There's going to be some Ultimate Guard sleeves, some Ultra Pro binders, play mats and sleeves, just a whole hodgepodge of different things. And the only way you can find out about this is to make sure to head over on Tuesdays to miniaturemarket.com, click on the backroom deals, and see what they have going on that week. Over the past several years, we have been huge fans of DeVere Games. I mean, DeVere Games has won my game of the year a couple times. I mean, it was White Castle was big for us last year. Red Cathedral has been big for us. There's so many that we've really enjoyed. So when they gave us a chance to check out their latest game, Sand, we were all over it. Let's just go ahead and say the production's top notch. Just expect that now, Tony. You know, from every DeVere game, the pieces are super nice. The cardboard's always really thick. The only thing is, though, there's so many pieces in this game, they didn't increase the size of the box. It is hard to fit all these pieces inside the box. There's a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. It is. It was amazing just what you had to do to cram it all in there and make it work. And then you had to put stuff together, and you were probably sitting there thinking, how are we ever going to deal with this?
And so this is by designers Ariel D. Costanzo and Javier Pellizzari. Now, remember, in one thing I loved about White Castle was the whole dice drafting thing. I love dice and euros and then drafting, and this has the exact same mechanic. Mm-hmm. The theme of the game is you got worms. I mean, it come out at the perfect time with Dune 2 coming out, but you got worms in the desert where you're trying to pick up supplies and deliver them. I mean, it's really, Tony, I guess at its core, a pickup and delivery game with your worms being your mode of transportation.
Is it really? Yeah, I guess it is.
Pickup and delivery. Because you're trying to get it to the right area to get you the most points, because certain areas are looking for certain color combinations of goods. And if you get them there, you can maximize the points. There's different areas on the board. Some are looking for certain types of goods where they'll score you a lot of points here, but the other goods may not score you as much there, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. But then that's kind of a resource conversion type game as well. Instead of just a simple pick up and deliver, you also have to get certain combos.
That's what I'm saying. There are certain spots on the board that are looking for, hey, if you bring us a red and a blue, you'll get more out of this delivery than it would be if it was just two reds.
Right. And I think that's where some of the complexity goes beyond just a regular pickup and delivery is what I'm trying to say is that picking up, certain ones. Yeah. If I just pick up two reds, it really doesn't matter if I, cause I can just deliver the reds or do I want to pick up a red and a white to make a blue? And I don't know if that was really the combinations. Doesn't matter. It's just as an example, but one of the unique things, cause this game, it took you a while. It took 30 minutes to teach this game.
It is a long game and it is a long teach because there is a lot going on your actions. It's like, oh, what do you do? Well, you can move your worm. You can pick up stuff. You can deliver stuff. You say those things. It's very simple, but there's a lot of criteria. Like when you want to move your worm, you got to draft a die.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make sure that the die is higher than the current value of the movement of which of your worm. If it's not, you can spend things to make up that difference. And then once you do that, you can move your worm. But then when you do, they have to use up energy, they use up food, they use up water. So you have to track all that. It's just simple movement. There's several steps that you got to go through to do that. And the same thing with picking up goods, because this was the part that kind of got to us. You actually have action selection tokens on your board based on the four different colors of dice that you can draft.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you pick up a red cube, you have to flip over your red action token. So you can't use the red action token, and the red cube takes up a spot on your board. So you can only use the three other action tokens, blue, black, and white, if they're available to you.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, I think that's what got to us, because the more stuff that you were carrying, the less actions you can do, which kind of slowed your turn down to a halt almost.
Oh, yeah. And I think that was the slog of it. And you could upgrade worms. You could get an additional action by delivering a certain amount of goods. So, I mean, you weren't completely broke, but it took a lot to strategize what to pick up and what dice to move. And I will say this, if you had a crappy roll, like a 3-1-1-1,
which happened a lot,
it was just like, oh man, are we ever going to gain momentum? Are we ever going to get our engine running here?
I think that's what got to us is that the pace was so slow at the beginning of the game because the worm doesn't move very far and it uses up a lot of resources. So remember I talked about when you move, it has to use up energy, food, water. Mm-hmm. Those stats get so low on your board, you can increase by taking the light color die and increasing that's a particular stat a certain amount. Prime example, hydration is represented by the blue die. If my hydration stat is low, what I can do is draft the blue die and move it up by that number on my track. Great. But Tony, like you said, what happens when like a 3-1-1-1 is rolled? Which that means, oh great, the blue die does me no good for increasing my food. This die doesn't do me any good for increasing my water. This doesn't do me good for increasing my energy. So am I going to waste my whole turn to increase it by one or do something else? But I don't have the resources to move the worm now because I've spent them all on a previous turn.
So we're sitting there thinking, okay, this is a tough nut to crack when we were playing this. We were trying to figure out what were we doing wrong. I mean, for instance, there was the shelter, some building that you could put out somewhere that allows you to...
Yeah, you put out the shelter, which is a place for you to drop off goods. Fantastic. So it's almost like a warehouse where I could put them out there and then go back and get them later for whenever I need them, which is nice. But again, you got to get the goods over there dropped off. And then you got to go back and pick them up and move them later. Like you said, upgrading the worm over the course of the game, the bigger the worm, the less water it uses, energy, etc. So that issue I had talked about before kind of goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But the pace is so slow at the beginning because that worm is so resource hungry each time you move it.
And if you get too far away from the delivery points, you got to figure out. I mean, it was just... Yep. I hate to be down on it, but we've played a lot of amazing DeVere games. You know, matter of fact, one of them was in your game of the year, right?
Right.
This one just
White Castle.
This one just kind of fell flat to me, and I think a lot of it was the concept of this managing. I love the action selection part of it and limiting yep. your ability. That worked for me, but I just felt like getting the restrictions on the worm just really hurt, especially when bad dice. And sometimes bad dice can really impact a game.
Now, again, there is dice mitigation. There is another resource that you can use to mitigate the value of a die. Great. But guess how you increase the value of that particular die?
Resources.
So if you have a bad roll on that color of die to increase that particular stat, you have this white stat called prey. That's what you can use to mitigate the value of the die. Well, if you spend all your prey resources and say the white die keeps rolling low, then you can't even get that back up, to take care of it.
And you're like, son.
Now, you can always spend money too, but then spending money is actually your victory points, mm-hmm. which is kind of how you win the game. You're trying to pick up the most things, deliver the most things at the right places to create the most money, to have the most victory points into the game. That's really kind of the whole goal.
That's it. And another thing that I think as this game will change over time, the random combinations of the cubes that come out from the bag. Mm-hmm. I think, if you've got certain ones that are like doubled up on the same colors, like two reds or two whites or something, that can also hamper some of the process in this game.
I do also like to, as you deliver goods, you have a really nice player board. And as you deliver certain types of goods, you store them on your board and they cover icons on your board, which can give you bonuses. That's the way to unlock your shelter. That is the way you can have the chance to upgrade your worm, et cetera. So the more goods you deliver, the more little things that you unlock to make it better. Now, what's cool about that is that the momentum of the game increases as you go into it. But the first part is so slowed before it starts picking up that by the time it picks up, you're kind of ready for it to be over.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I think 4 players too much. I think 3 players the way to play this game, because it's not necessarily going to be shorter, but you get to play an extra round. And I found that, man, if I just had one more round, I can make this final delivery. I can make this final pickup, etc. So I think I would rather play the same amount of time with an extra round than with 4 people and one less round, or basically one less set of actions.
I can see that. And I think also you need to help any new players to this. You would help them strategize on, hey, your worm, advancing that worm is pretty important. Don't let that, you're not going to be able to do that later.
Upgrading the worm.
Upgrading the worm. Yeah, advancing. Yep. Upgrading the worm. With DeVere, of course, top-notch production. The board, the player boards are amazing, where to place the cubes, how to track everything. But I will say this, even after the 30 minutes, it was straightforward. All these little things that you went through with us, it was pretty straightforward once we got playing the game.
Yes. But there was a couple contradictions in the rule book that we found where the rule book said something, but the picture that showed something else. And it was the flipping of, it was with loading of the plants and the flipping of the little tokens from the die side to the gift side. They didn't line up with each other. And so as gamers, we just had to decide it's got to be this way and not this way for this mm-hmm. to work. Yeah. So we kind of got bogged down in that. Hopefully that is cleared up and maybe there'll be an errata listed on BGG that says, by the way, in the rule book, this is what we mean by this for clarification. But that stuck us for a while because we were passing that rule book around for probably 5 minutes trying to figure out this one little thing.
Right. I'd play it again. I mean, there's other DeVeres that if you put on the table, but I'd like to try it again just to see if we could get better at it.
Again, when it comes to all the great DeVere games that are out there, I have such a high bar for those. This did not reach Red Cathedral or Jerusalem or Bamboo or White Castle for me. But I really like dice drafting games. I think that part is really clever. I just think that you really got to be on your toes early in the game to maybe you try to build momentum a little bit quicker and not worry about trying to deliver the most efficient delivery to get the most points, but instead just generate a little bit of resources, deliver a little bit of goods so you could upgrade your worm and then maybe build momentum quicker from there.
I agree. Completely agree with you.
That is Sand, from Devere Games, plays 1 to 4 players. Playing time is listed at 2 hours with 4 players. It's every bit of 2 hours and possibly more. If this sounds interesting to you, go check it out and let us know what you think.
5 minute initiative begins in 3, 2, 1.
From Synapsis Games, we got to try Finding Atlantis, designed by Andreas Wild. And this is a hidden traitor game. No, it's not.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Not.
No, you're trying to find Atlantis.
Yeah, we're trying to find Atlantis. Yes. It's basically a deduction game.
Mm-hmm.
This is an app-driven game where you're going to use your phone. And this has got to be one of the more clever app-driven games, Tony, because of the use of the camera. And you're going to play cards on your turn. You're going to scan the card. You got a piece of paper that's a grid that's hidden from everybody else, and you're going to use it to take notes as you try to find the hidden city of Atlanta. So you're going to move your sub around, and you're going to be able to do like searches. Hey, did I find something here? Is there something here? Is there a piece of treasure here? And as you do that, you're going to mark it on your piece of paper. Maybe you find something, you get a little bit of extra treasure. And this is the first person that finds Atlantis wins the game.
Playing these cards, you had a fast move, a normal move. Other players don't know what you're doing. It's hidden until you surface.
Well, everybody sees what you're doing. Everybody sees I did a fast move or a slow move. Nobody has any clue where you are.
That's what
I mean. And what I like is, so you play a card, you discard it. You don't get those back into your hand until you, like you said, surface. You get to take all your cards back, but then everybody gets to see where you currently are on the map. And they'll try to go, he found a treasure earlier, or he found this earlier. So that part of the map is probably right around here, because there's certain attributes of the map that will indicate where Atlantis is going to be. Mm-hmm. You're looking for actually mountains, underwater mountains, where Atlantis might be.
Right. And when you're pinging for these positions, you're marking it on yours. And I love the ingenuity of the map orienting for the player. So what I mean about this is the north, south, east, and west, you're not having to spin things. You just pass the phone a certain way, and you're dealing with that orientation, and you've got to keep that straight in your head. Because if you mess that up, then you mess up what you're doing on your sheet.
When you have the phone out, they say, look, you got to always make sure the phone is sitting the same way at the beginning of the mm-hmm. game. So at the front of the phone is like pointing towards the window, then it needs to stay pointing towards the window, because that's the reference point for everybody sitting around the table, because you tell the app where everybody is sitting. So what may be west for me is east for you, right? So mm-hmm. the app keeps up with this.
Right. Personally, when you were dealing with this, I'm like, another gimmicky little game using an app, right? Mm-hmm. When I first started doing this, what brought me into the game was the card play. A lot of strategy in the card play, and just how that worked, and I was trying to throw you off the trail of where I thought Atlantis was. And then I got mm-hmm. mad at the app because there was no way Atlantis wasn't where I said it was. but that's just it. If you ever guess for Atlantis, it's going to throw you. It's like you got pushed away by some Leviathan, and you suddenly move all the way across the board or something like that, which can really be a bummer because you can only move one or two spaces.
Yeah, so if you make some bad guesses and stuff, like a sea monster actually pops up in that spot. And if somebody runs across it, it does something negative to them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, too, is you can also find like artifacts, which are additional cards or things that you can use. So you can modify your hand over the course of the game. But it's the card play that's unique. Play a card, discard it. But at some point in time, you're going to need a card that you've used earlier for like scanning or movement, etc. You're going to have to service and expose right where you are so everybody can see you.
The randomness. First off, you're thinking about, it's going to be very random every time because it's AI generated.
Mm-hmm.
I did get myself lost in this game as to where I was marking. You got to be very clear on your marks and understand what that is. I think there's some special treasure cards that may be a little bit OP, but not a lot. You had one, I think, that was pretty good. You have special players' powers, and I thought mine was pretty good where I could pick a spot and ping it, and that was one of the cards you had to use. But, you know, that was just one you could bring back in. And I think that was very helpful. All this comes together for a really unique, entertaining game. I'm looking on BGG and they say 40 to 100 minutes. You're like, how can this be? It can be, I think.
It can be. So some positives I have to it. It could play, like I said, multiple players. It'd be fun solo. If you just want to see how fast you can find Atlantis, no reason why you can't play it solo. The special powers are neat because in the beginning of the game, like you said, there's captain cards, which each one's unique. The tech, I just think, is kind of cool. The thing was, it got to us, though. At the very end of the game, Tony, we were just kind of all around each other, just ping, move, ping, move, ping, move. It was kind of a crapshoot. We kind of knew where it was, but then at that point, it was just like, who's just going to find it first sort right. of deal.
Yeah, I pretty well felt good about my location, but I mismarked my map. So that is Finding Atlantis from Synapsis Games.
5 minute initiative is complete.
So you know that detective game that has the Batman theme, Everybody Lies? If you want that game, you better get it now because the Batman license has expired for Portal and that game cannot be bought after May. So if you want it, you need to head out to shopportalgames.com, pull up Everybody Lies and get it for yourself because once it's gone, it's gone. I think it's a really clever use of the Batman theme in the detective universe. You get to play as characters in that universe through multiple scenarios. The art's really cool and everything like that. Ignacy's been telling everybody on his YouTube channel, and I'm now sharing it with everybody else here. This month, game goes away. Everybody Lies. Get it now or it's gone forever. So look for it over at shopportalgames.com. Queen Games has a new series of games called Family and Friends Games, which are kind of more lighter games that you can get around the table for maybe people a little bit younger that don't have a lot of experience playing games. And the game that we got to try is called Dabba Walla, Mumbai, or is it Mumbai?
Mumbai.
Mumbai Food Express by Patricia Leinberger and Felix Letter. So let me explain to you Dabba Walla. What is that, Marty? Straight from the rules, dabbas are an Indian lunch box that consists of several bowls into which various components of lunch are packed. They are stacked on top of each other, connected by a snap lock system. Who are the Dabba Walla? That refers to a male profession of dabba vendors who can be recognized by their white clothing and headgear, and they are a unique sight in the cityscape of Mumbai. So the Dabba Wallas will go by and pick up these pre-prepared dabbas, stack them and sort them on a bike, carry them to a train, get them on a train, carry them out and deliver them as lunches. So, Tony, it's like Uber Eats that's just been around for decades over in India, and we're just now catching up to the brilliance of what they've been doing for decades, actually.
I was really surprised by this 99% guaranteed rate. You know, when I was reading the flavor text, they're the 99% successful. That's amazing. I mean, there are billions of people over there.
So in this game, you're playing as a Dabba Walla, and the game is split up into two halves. What you're going to be doing in the first half of the game is you have a map of Mumbai, and you're going to be going around to one of six spots on the board to collect a card. A card will tell you what kind of Tetris piece, basically, that you're going to pick up that's going to have different shapes, different colors, that you're going to stack onto your card. There's multiple cards that you can use of different grids, shaped grids. We just did a basic square. And you're going to start stacking them on your card. So you're going to go through and make multiple levels of stacks. Once you get one level completely filled, you start on a second level and increase from there. Once you've gone through the entire deck of cards and everybody's done all these nice little stacking, the second half of the game is where you do the delivery aspect, where level by level, you're going to peel off the Tetris pieces, and based on the color and what you set the value of the color of the Dabba ad on that level will determine how many points it's worth. And what's interesting about this game, Tony, is I said, oh, this is based on a person who goes and picks up Dabbas, takes them and delivers them somewhere, and tries to be as efficient as possible. So you would think, well, Marty, this must be a pickup and delivery game. It is not.
It is not.
It is a tile laying game with a little bit of a market style game at the end based on cards that you play at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. So when we got the play on this, I think a couple things stood out to me after the game. Typical tile laying games, you're going to sit there and think, okay, I need to complete each layer, right?
Yeah. So let's say, for example, we did the bicycle card, which is a 3x3 grid. So you're trying to fill up a 9, you know, section spot on the board and stack levels of those.
And we feel like by doing so that, oh, we're successful. Okay. Mm-hmm. And every time you start stacking more tiles on top of one another, you're increasing the level. And I think that was one of the things that for us to be completisms, we're wanting to do every level. There's a part of this game that, you know, from the scoring aspect, that if you complete a level, if you complete the most levels or the highest level and no one else is there, you'll get to score that level, right? But they won't.
Right, right. But they can affect the scoring of that level because these are multi-use cards. Remember I said you go around the city and you pick up a card and it tells you what shape of tile to get? This could be a single tile, two tile, three tile, like an L-shaped, a T-shaped tile. So there's different shapes here. So it tells you which one to pick up to place on your board. But also at the bottom of the card is going to be a value, a color and a value that's going to be used to determine the value of a certain type of daba or certain color of tile, depending on the level which you play it, which we'll talk about in a second. So when you're drafting, there's two things you're looking at. One, the tile that you're taking, and one that's going to be used in the second half of the game to determine values of certain tiles.
And the tile on above is not the will not have the colors below. Mm-hmm. So there's some balance in there in taking certain tiles. So you can, you know, get yourself in a, tunnel vision to where you are trying to complete just your board and not paying attention to that. You're just looking at the pieces at the bottom. And I think I did that at the at the beginning of the game. And I think if I were to play it again or if I were to teach it to someone, it would be one where I need to say, you really need to be thinking about a balance between not only the shapes or the levels as well as the colors on the bottom. Because you only have a hand of three cards. Well, you start with two, you'll draft one, so you'll always have two in your hand. And that could be ones that can help your scoring at the end because you're not going to get to play them all at the scoring at the end. So you've got to start thinking just beyond completing the levels. You got to think about how you're going to impact the scoring, what other people are taking. Because if I know if Marty's filling up his board with red, then he's going to have different colors that may help my scoring later. I think there was more to it than I originally caught on to this game.
And as you're building your levels, people may wonder, well, what's the rules for building? So when you're laying tiles, tiles can't lay outside the grid. Every piece of a tile must be supported by something underneath. And you go, well, Marty, what happens about if there's a single spot and you can't draft a card that has a single color tile? Well, you can at any time take a tile that's like a grayish color, but it would be worth negative points at the end of the game. So you do have a supply of tiles, single cell tiles that you can use to fill in spots in a layer if you need to, but they're going to be worth negative points. So you don't want to do that if you don't have to, but sometimes you may have to just so you can start on that next layer.
And I like the idea of if I stack tiles and I can support them, I don't have to complete a level. I can go right next to the next level. And then continue to build up. Maybe I'll take smaller tiles and continue to, you know, offset that so that I can build up my levels and get higher than anyone else. Mm-hmm. It'll be difficult, but you can do that, especially in the later rounds, because you can always go back and fill in the bottom. You just can't lift the tiles.
Right. And also, how you strategically lay the tiles could be important because some of the tiles have little symbols like half moon symbols are called a chai symbol. If you could line up two chai symbols, you get a chai tile, which can be used at certain parts in the game. Some of the chai tiles are only used for the first half. Some are used for the second half. And we found by having those is very beneficial, especially in the second half of the game where those can be used to actually help modify scoring.
Yeah, one-time bonuses or something like that. Some of them I was like, delay using this card later. I'm not really sure how that would have helped me, but it might have. I don't know. I didn't see it when I was playing.
Play your card later is in setting the scoring. Oh. You get to see what everybody else has set before you play your card.
Okay.
So if somebody's going to negatively impact the value of one color, you could possibly negate that. So let's talk about how the second half works. So all the cards are gone. The board is really cool in that, so you got this little map that you're moving your pieces on. When you flip the board over, it becomes a market board where you have four rows. Each row represents the color of the different tiles, blue, red, yellow, green. Level by level, each of us are going to take a card from our hand and we're going to play it. And we're going to simultaneously reveal it. The bottom of the card will tell you what we're going to set the value of each of those colors. So say, for example, there's four people playing and some people play, hey, plus one blue on, two of us play plus one blue. So the value of the blue dabas go to two. Mm-hmm. Somebody else may play, hey, plus one red goes up one. Somebody could play minus one red and it goes back to zero. So once all those cards have been played, then each of you will take off that level that you're currently evaluating and score points based on what the current value is in the market for that level. So if Tony peels off three blue tiles and the value set at two, he gets 6 points. If I peel off six red tiles and his value is zero, I get nada.
That's it.
So you can affect other people's scoring. And that's what we did, right? If I had a bunch of colors, you and Bert would go, well, screw that. I'm going to make sure you don't score anything for that red.
Which goes back to my original. If I'm watching you build your level two, I might be trying to key on what you're building as well, because then you'll help me when we go into the scoring round.
Yeah. If you have a lot of red and I have a little red, I'm just like, we're both going to benefit from it. Let's move up red. And then after you resolve a level, all those scoring markers go back to zero. So it resets each level. You play another card and determine the value. And again, those chai tiles, which I mentioned earlier, some of those can be also played at the same time. And some of those will have ways to modify the different color values too.
Keeping in mind, those red levels, you better have picked some cards that have some red on them.
Yeah. And so again, it's two different styles of game. One, card drafting, tile laying, tile placement, which is, you know, if you're into that sort of like trying to fit pieces together and get them to work, then you're going to like that part. Second half, using those cards that you drafted, and then you're going to be doing like a market style game and trying to shift the prices of the market depending on the cards that are played and try to score the most points that you can. But Tony, again, I just think it's interesting. The whole theme of this is picking up dabbers and delivering them, but it's not really a pick up and deliver game.
it's selecting tiles, picking up certain tiles that help you. That's it.
Again, I see why this is a family and friends game. It plays in under hour, like 40, 45 minutes. Setup is really easy. I will say that when you first buy this game, they have these trays that you can assemble for storing all your pieces while you play. That was a bear. It took me an hour to assemble those pieces because the cardboard was really thin and it has those things where you had the notches and pieces of thin cardboard where you got to try to stick them together perpendicularly and slide them into each other. I crinkled them. I crumpled them. They got ripped. The paper would peel off. It was a bear to get put together. I did. The tray's now working and everything like that, so be prepared. You can't just open the game and play. There will be a little bit of time for your first time of getting all those trays constructed. Or just use plastic bags and store all the pieces in bags, which will totally work too. So this is a brand new game from Queen Games, Dabba Walla, a family and friends game, which definitely falls into a category that I for sure think I could teach my family. Mats. I love game mats. I love game mats for playing cards. I love big old game mats for putting board games on. And if you enjoy having some nice game mats, head over to GameToppersLLC.com. We're talking 11 different sizes, 32 different styles, including some from some of the top board game artists. These are high quality mats, stitched, built to last. Tony and I have used ours for years without any issues whatsoever, and now with the way to store the mats such as the Baker Street Irregular Caddy Storage and Mat Racks, you have a solution for storing all the different types of mats that you get. All these are available right now over at the web store. Just head over to GameToppersLLC.com. So last episode I talked about a video game that I was playing, Unicorn Overlord. I have finished, Tony. 43 hours it took me to complete the game. Love the game so much that I played the post-game side quest just to see what it would do.
Okay. Has it gone back on sale and you forgot to tell me?
I don't know because I haven't looked at it.
Because you bought it. I mean, that's
I did. So Travis finished the game, really loved it. I really enjoyed it. You can borrow mine if you want, if you don't want to have to buy it. But this was the last time I played a game that was this many hours to where I didn't feel like I'm just getting tired of playing this. I want it to finish. I really enjoyed my whole experience with it because I love the fact that, okay, I can set up my teams to go do these fantasy battles, but it's not a turn-based thing like Fire Emblem where it's like, okay, you go, I go, you go, and battles can get tedious. Once I have my team set and their abilities, hit a button and the battle just resolved.
Okay.
So combat was really quick and fluid.
Yeah, because when you were first talking about this in the last episode, I just had flashbacks to that style where it just takes forever. I really enjoyed Skies Over Arcadia, and it was that way, but I think I just don't have that in me anymore. So anything that's quick, you know? But building a team, hey, go for it. I think that's what, when we, you know, Advance Wars, we were all excited about it coming out again, but yet, you know, it was just taking forever and just lost interest.
Yeah, so it is definitely not that. So yeah, if Advance Wars feel like, oh, sometimes these battles are just taking forever. Oh, crap, I lost. I got to do it again. Sort of done. I got to reinvest another 45 minutes. It's definitely not that way. The story is pretty generic. It's just a standard fantasy story. So don't go into it expecting this really great story. It's not really there, but the gameplay was super good. So now that I'm done with that, I have on pre-order Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, which is the action RPG that I'm going to be getting. But after I played Minish Cap and loved it so much, I thought, what are some other old games that I just never played? Because there's really nothing coming out I'm really excited about. And then I realized, you know what? I never finished Super Metroid. So I have cranked up Super Metroid on Nintendo Online. And when I looked up, it was only a 7-hour game. It's like, okay, I can definitely get through this. So I'm actually playing through Super Metroid right now.
All right. Well, good for you. I'm still not really gearing up for anything. I started Black Flag Assassins. Rogue game, see how that will play out. I just haven't gone back to it. I updated the PlayStation, achieved that goal, got my controllers updated, hadn't cranked it up in a while.
I've got to because I bought Stellar Blade. I haven't opened it yet, but I did buy Stellar Blade because I like that style of action game, so I'm anxious to try it.
Okay, getting ready to drop some money on Guild Wars 2, even though they're going to come out with Guild Wars 3. I'm going to get the next expansion for it, even though I hadn't started the other expansion.
Well, if you start the expansion, let me know and we'll play together.
Well, the problem is I only play like for 15 minutes. That's the problem. I sit here, you know, on the game and I'll crank it up for a little bit, go do a little something. Like after we get off tonight, I will go in, I will go mine my materials with one of my characters and then I'll get out, you know, or I might go do a heart mission or something like that. Right now I'm trying to level up some hero points on one character so I can figure out how to play it. So that's pretty much what I'm doing with the video games. Other than that, I am really working hard on some Star Wars Unlimited decks.
Now that we've got a lot of cards open, I'm really starting to get into the whole deck modifying and building and everything like that. And I told you last week, the more that we play, there's like a part of my brain that's starting to unlock that used to be wide open when we're playing games like Lord of the Rings, CCG, and Netrunner, where I'm starting to learn a game so well that it's like, oh, I kind of know what Tony might have in his deck and how he might do this. And I need to counter that. And I think this is a good strategy to do this. All those little bits of my brain I haven't used in forever in a game are starting to come back to life. And I think that's a great feeling. I love that.
Yeah, it's like I'm looking at some of the leaders that I've unlocked by opening the packs and can't wait to go and say, okay, do you have these few leaders? But I'm trying to say, okay, if this leader has this aspect, he has these two aspects, which one do I want to make with him? And do I want to go into my other deck and basically cannibalize it so I can use that leader? Okay. Mm-hmm. How can I mix up? That to me is the fun of these games, is looking for that off thing that everybody's going to be, oh, it's going to be, and I'll use colors. You know, I'm going to do black, blue, and green, or black, blue, red, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say, well, no one's using, because of the key words, black, blue, and the yellow, the trickster right. side of it. You right. know, how can I do that? And is there a benefit from doing that? Those are really the things. I need to get on the website that you sent me that has all the decks that you can enter yeah. your deck in. I haven't done that yet, just so I can see the various cards, see which ones I'm missing. Haven't really pulled any major expensive cards yet. It seems like all of my hyperspace cards are commons, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Don't really care. So I've seen some few rares that are kind of interesting.
Oh, cool. I did get a last pack I opened. I got a hyperspace foil of rare base, which nice. Is kind of cool. I don't think it's worth anything. It looks really cool. But you and I did do something that we used to do forever ago, is we went out to eBay mm-hmm. and bought complete sets of uncommons. So each of us invested like $26 each to get two complete sets of uncommons for each of us to probably go along with probably maybe close to a full set of uncommons you already have already. That's how you do it, man. You don't go mm-hmm. out and buy boxes of these things. You just fill in your gaps with cheap uncommon and common sets that are on eBay. And then if there's a deck you really want to get, just go buy the rare by itself if you want it.
All right. And then we're not going to go into competitive. I don't see you and I sitting at Gen Con playing in the Star Wars Unlimited tournament. I'm not going. The days of me sitting at a table for 5 hours playing, that's not happening.
That's why I wish you could make the draft event that we're going to be doing the 11th, because that is really just three games. So you're not spending 5 hours. It's three games and then it's over, but it's so much fun. And because it's not really competitive, because you're just getting random packs and building decks from that.
And that's what we did with the Android Netrunner. We would go one night and we would each play. You would play three times, both mm-hmm. your corporation and your runner. And then you would go play someone else, and then game was over. And it was, I think it only took us like 3 hours for all those games that we got to play. Yep. Same thing with these. It's said and done, you know, like the other day, it was like, bam, you had a great draw and, oh, well, that's it for this. This will be over in no time. You were able to get those resources going. There are a few things in the game, and I told people to get ready for this. We were going to start talking about this. I don't understand some of the resources. I think there's a destroyer that costs 10.
Yep.
I know there's cards that can become resources. Yep. So you've got to have those in the deck and you got to get them out fast so you can get that 10 out. Cause other than that, if you're up to the 10 resources, you're dead the way we're playing now.
Yeah. But I've seen some high end decks use that. I watched a tournament of a person that used that deck, and basically he just makes the game slow until he can get 10 out. And then it's kind of over at that point for him. So he was able to control the board state enough to where he could protect his base until he got his 10 resources, and that Devastator Destroyer, whatever it is, I can't remember, comes out, and then it was just absolutely brutal mm-hmm. at that point. But what's cool is, you know, they got the new set coming out and they're starting to tease new cards, and I'm like, ooh, I think I can use that. And like the old one came out, it's a piece of equipment that you can add that gives +2 power, +2 health. But the text on the card says, when you're defending, the attacker gets -1 power when on the attack. And you think that's really cool. But what's even cooler is like, wait a minute, if you stick that on a Sentinel, then they have to attack that card and mm-hmm. they're going to be coming in at -1 power. I thought, oh, that's brilliant right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, that's the fun of this. That's what we enjoy, is trying to figure out these. And I mean, all these LCGs, TCGs have that type of effect. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about this. I think there is a lot of simplicity to this game and there's nothing wrong with it.
I was getting ready to say, if you were going to say it, it's because it's so simple. The gameplay, the rules are so simple, which means I can start getting my head around the deck building because it's not a very complex game.
There you go. So we went from video games to Star Wars Unlimited. I got a feeling that's what's going to be in our outros for a while, as long as we continue to play this.
Very easy to skip.
Oh, yeah. Unless I don't tag it, because I only tag outros with the word outro.
No time stamps for anything in the outro itself.
That's right. There could be some gems in there, so you got to hang around. But if you're done, then keep rolling dice.
And taking names. Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow us on our socials at Dyson Names, join our Discord channel. You can find the link over on our website, RollDiceTakeNames.com. If you'd like to support the show, you could do so by heading over to BuyMeAMoonPie.com. You can do ongoing gifts or one-time gifts. And thanks to all those who have supported in the past and continue to support today.
You can go with Gramps, Opa, Poppy, Bubba, Nano, Skip, Chief, Gamps, Lolo, Captain, Ace, Baba, Big Daddy, Peepaw. Go! Oh, that's you. I found your winner, Marty. Marty, you are now Peepaw.
I like the father of a son who happened to have another son. Can we just like leave it like that?
It won't fit on a t-shirt.